Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
But how did you get involved in this? Was it this haunting situation that got to you?
Yeah, definitely. As far as what led me down the paranormal path, it was definitely the experiences that I had growing up. I feel that I kind of often say to people that I feel when somebody has a very unique experience with the paranormal, when you know for a fact you've encountered something of this kind, I think there's kind of two ways you can go. One, you can kind of tuck tail, go the other way, hope it never happens again, or you basically become kind of consumed and intrigued by it. You know, what is this? How could this be? It kind of leads you on a quest wanting to know more.
Tell us about this situation that you were involved in when you were smaller, and then we'll get into the crazy situation of Ed Gein.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the haunting in the house where I grew up in, I was very young when it, you know, obviously when this happened. So kind of going back to my first memories of, you know, really understanding it was, I guess you could say, some of the smaller things at first. Things would come up missing and, you know, I would hear the family kind of arguing about it. You know, where did this go? Who did this or who broke this? Who opened up all the cupboards? Who keeps doing that? It was, you know, rather unusual. And this kind of progressed and then ultimately got to the point where, you know, doors would start opening and slamming, objects would move on their own, we would hear disembodied voices, that type of thing. And it didn't take long before everybody in the home, you know, basically had to acknowledge this is a real thing, this is truly happening. Back in this time frame, of course, it was a little more of a taboo subject, so you couldn't really talk much about it with your neighbors, you didn't really want to talk about it, or there was really nobody to bring in for, you know, to help like there is today. It's so much more accepted now. There's paranormal groups and mm-hmm. demonologists and so many different things, but that's kind of, where we were, and ultimately we ended up moving out of the house.
How did you unravel the fact that a couple people got murdered there?
Well, it was kind of a well-known fact, you know, I mean, you know, we knew the situation. I guess, of course, at the time I didn't. That wasn't something that, you know, my parents really wanted to talk much about. And I was really too young to kind of hear that kind of stuff. But, later on, of course, you know, you start to hear everything and what happened. And there's a lot of rumors about that as well, as far as what really happened and why. A lot of people have suggested maybe at this point I go back and actually investigate the home. For the longest time, I said I would not do that. But I guess maybe as time goes by, maybe curiosity will eventually get the best of me.
Steve, did your parents know about the murders before they bought the house?
You know, they said that they didn't, but I kind of feel that they did.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
Well, you know, I think it's just kind of one of those things. Sometimes an opportunity presents itself when you're looking for a home on the market and the price is just right. And, you know, they were struggling at the time, no doubt.
Sure.
To kind of make ends meet early on. And so I just think it was the right, you know, the right price, the right situation for the time.
And if I remember, Saginaw, it kind of lived and died by the auto industry out that way, didn't it?
Saginaw, yeah, definitely. Its history is kind of a boom town, you know, way back when in the 1800s. It was actually one of the wealthiest cities in America during the lumber era. And, of course, you know, eventually they cut everything down and that went away and came back again with automotive. And right now it's more of a healthcare.
Right next to Flint, Michigan, that had those horrendous water problems. So has that gotten any better?
You know, sadly, it really hasn't.
Oh, geez.
The story kind of went away, but yet it's still very much the same.
Steve, how did you get involved in producing documentaries and paranormal stories like that?
Well, you know, as I continued, you know, basically my quest into the paranormal, trying to understand it, you know, I started doing a lot of investigating and, you know, really kind of how it all came about at some point, you know, I have a career as a national recording artist and we were on tour one day and a good friend of mine that I was touring with said, you know, I'd like to see some of that. And I said, well, what do you mean? You know, well, I'd like to see your episodes. And I said, well, we don't have any episodes. You know, we go out and investigate, we have footage. And he said, well, why don't you film that? You know, there's a lot of people do that. Why don't you film your investigations? Don't you think people would like to see that? And I kind of thought about it and I said, well, you know, I think my music fan base is quite different than, you know, what would be a fan base for that type of content, but, you know, maybe. And I kind of thought about that, put that thought in the back of my mind. And several months later, we were embarking on a new investigation. And I just kind of thought, well, you know, why don't we just try this? You know, why don't we, you know, document it in documentary format and just see what happens? And ultimately we did that. And when it was finished, we decided we wanted to premiere it. So we went to a local theater, and they kind of looked at us crazy, and they said, well, you know, we have 2,000 seats here. I don't think this is the place for you. And so we looked at them, and we said, okay, well, you know, we'll take our chances, I guess. You know, it's only a city of 40,000 people here. And we actually ended up selling it out both nights. And
well,
then
from
that
great.
Point, we've continued ever since. We've got 10 available and 4 more coming.
Good for you. Good for you. I mean, you've been a recording artist for at least, what, 15 years?
Yeah, probably around 20.
Good for you. And you're a rapper by trade, aren't you?
Yeah, yep.
That's cool. That's good. And we'll talk about the music scene on another show, to be sure, but it's been changing, hasn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. It's ever-evolving, ever-changing, and I, you know, really kind of feel for... you know, for all my friends that are still doing that full time, because I, you know, I can only imagine what COVID has done to that, what 2020 has done to that.
Oh, my God. Now, the Discovery Channel has a stream program that they just debuted on Friday of last week called Ed Gein, The Real Psycho. How did you get involved in this strange story?
Okay, well, so actually... A bizarre set of circumstances. So I'll give you a quick version of the long story, I guess.
Okay, and then I'll have you explain who Ed Gein is to people who don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had actually ran into an individual by, you know, pure chance at a restaurant one day. And I, you know, kind of was hearing them talking about cameras and different things. So we kind of struck up a conversation and... exchange numbers and whatnot. And, you know, he was in filmmaking. So was I. And then about a year later, he contacted me and he said, hey, you know, do you remember meeting me? I said, yeah, of course. He says, well, you know, we've got a project coming our way regarding an individual named Ed Gein. Are you familiar? And so right away, I just started shooting off facts to this guy about Ed Gein. I've actually studied him a lot.
Wow.
And he just stopped me and he said, okay, hold on a minute. You're the guy. Let me explain. We're looking for a paranormal investigator who is willing to take on this case and go out to Plainfield, Wisconsin. Are you in? And I said, absolutely. Count me in.
Ed Gein was one strange guy. Isn't he the guy Steve, that Silence of the Lambs kind of built its movie around?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, a lot of notable fictional characters were created off the real-life individual Ed Gein. Texas Chainsaw Massacre's Leatherface, most popular Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, Norman Bates, and, of course, Silence of the Lambs' Buffalo Bill.
Ed Gein, of course, was born in 1906 in Wisconsin. He was called the Butcher of Plainfield or the Plainfield Ghoul. He was an American convicted murderer. He was a body snatcher. His crimes committed around his hometown of Plainfield, Wisconsin, gathered widespread notoriety back in 1957 after authorities discovered that he had, this is what this guy did, exhumed corpses from local graveyards, and then he skinned them and kept their heads, and he did all kinds of crazy things, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's as you said, you know, he definitely was a murderer, a grave robber. He would exhume these corpses, bring them back to his farmhouse. And what he would do is he would go through the local obituaries and he would try to find women that he felt resembled his mother and wait for them to have their funeral and be buried. And then that night he would sneak out to the cemetery, exhume them, bring them back to his farmhouse, and actually take parts of their body, their skin, and other anatomy, we'll say. And he was creating a full-body skin suit in which he would dress up in, masks. He would use human skulls and create bowls that he would eat out of, silverware made from bones, and all sorts of other macabre things.
Oh, my God. And then he confessed to killing two women himself, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my God. And I remember the scene in Silence of the Lambs where the guy was dancing around the house with skin on him just like clothes. And so I assume that's what Gein did.
Yeah, absolutely. He would say he would go out at night so nobody would see him. I mean, he was in a really rural area anyway, but he would go out at night and just dance around the fields and was trying to emulate, in theory, we feel after all the investigation that we did, almost like he was trying to emulate his mother in some type of way, like a split personality.
What was it about the Gein case that kind of pulled you in?
I feel that, I guess, trying to understand the incomprehensible. I guess, you know, probably a lot of the reasons why people, you know, watch documentaries on serial killers. But Gein was just such a bizarre case in so many ways. It was so gruesome. It was so out of the realm of understanding. There was no emotion there. It was, nobody really even knows what his purpose was. And I'm not even sure Gein did really understand what compelled him to do what he was doing.
I mean, his father died of heart failure when he was, 34? And what was it that flipped this guy out?
You know, from our investigation, you know, when you bring up his father, you know, he was a pretty severe alcoholic. But really, I think the abuse in Gein's childhood came from his mother, Augusta Gein. She instilled and ingrained in him at a very early age that humans were inherently evil, and particularly women. Didn't want him to have any relationships at all, friendships, really kept him isolated. And toward the end of his life, so to speak, I guess you could say, or the end of his heyday, it was just him and his mother isolated in this farmhouse. And when she finally passed away, that's when Gein just really went off the deep end.
Gein finally died at the age of 77 in the Mendota Mental Health Institute in Madison, Wisconsin. And I'm sure nobody misses the guy, Steve.
No, definitely not.
Now, when you were looking at this case, tell me, what was it that really flipped you out, that got you really scared?
You know, I think the things that I found, you know, most disturbing was the fact that, you know, when we're coming through all these reports and we're listening to the interviews from people at the time and all the locals, they're describing Gein as a rather simple man, but a very, you know, trustworthy individual. You know, good old Eddie Gein down the road. He made his living doing oddball jobs. He'd go to people's homes. They'd let him in and say, hey, you know, Eddie, if we're not here, just go ahead and come in and, you know, go ahead and fix that sink or fix that, you know, that old cabinet cupboard there. And even in the reports, it was found that Gein actually used to babysit for people in the community.
Oh, God. They actually liked the guy, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did. You know, and another thing I think that really kind of disturbed me about Gein, and you know, let me kind of, you know, get your take on this, but when one of the victims that he murdered went missing, Mary Hogan, you know, it was a, you know, small town, so that didn't just go away anytime soon. People would talk about it quite often, and he'd be at the local diner and such, and people would be saying, you know, wonder what happened to Mary. Mary went up missing.
And she owned a bar or something, didn't she?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's where she disappeared from. And Gein would say to people, oh, you know, she's not missing. She's at my place. She's hanging around my place. You know,
well, technically he was right.
Humor, but in hindsight, I guess the question I have is, was it a dark sense of humor, or was he just matter-of-factly saying it?
I mean, this guy could have been so whacked out, Stephen, that he probably thought she was still alive when she was dead in his house.
I definitely thought the same thing. In fact, another really, really bizarre thing about Gein is that he would have skulls arranged in the house at eye level on shelves and things, almost like they were companions to him.
You went to the house, did you not, in Plainfield, Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah. We went onto the farm and the land right where the house stood, because right after Gein was arrested and there was basically a media frenzy, you know, converging onto Plainfield, somebody went out there in the middle of the night and literally just torched the house and burnt it right to the ground.
Wow. Now, you went out there with a psychic medium, Cindy Kaza?
Yeah, Cindy Kaza, yep.
Tell me about her abilities.
You know, so this was my first time working with Cindy. I mean, of course, you know, I knew who she was. I've seen a lot of her work. She's very reputable. But this was my first encounter working with her. What amazed me about her is, I mean, first of all, she had just a ton of senses out there. From the minute she walked out on the farm, she was having visions. She felt that Augusta, his mother, was present. A very dominating force, wanting us to leave, calling her a witch. I don't want to give away too much, but what really impressed me with Cindy is every time she would have the sense that somebody was present and she would call that out, Steve, someone is here, someone is coming up behind me right now. The meters would all start to go off within about 20 to 30 seconds, and the meters would be in the proximity of where she was saying the spirit was. And in one instance particular, we were at the old Warden's Hardware store, and I have an SLS system, and I'm kind of scanning the room looking for any type of anomaly.
And Warden being where Bernice Warden was killed in 1957, she owned a hardware store.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ultimately, what, you know, that was Ed's downfall there is when he killed and took Bernice out of the hardware store. He had gone in the hardware store the night before and made mention in front of some customers that he was going to come in the next day. And so that's basically why he became a suspect. The police went out to talk to him. He wasn't home. They let themselves in, and that's when they found her, Bernice, hanging upside down and decapitated.
Oh,
and then, of course, everything unraveled at that point. They found pieces of Mary Hogan and at least 10 or more corpses.
What was it like being out there on his land? Did it feel strange to you?
It definitely felt very foreboding, very ominous from the minute we got out there. I mean, you know, of course, we have to separate the fact that, you know, we know what happened there. So part of that, you know, could play into the psyche. But beyond that, there really was kind of a visceral sense that something was there.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine. or a ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.